Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hey, nice to have you along again on the broadcast, Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Ryan Thomas at the controls. Grace there taking the phone calls. And got a guest in studio today. Looking forward to spending a little time together as we talk about parenting adolescence and some of the challenges to help pass the faith along. That is, you know, one of the things at Connecting Faith we talk about on Faith Radio. It's about how do we help connect faith to life. And on this program, we like to find ways that we can apply biblical principles to daily life situations. Maybe nothing more important than passing the faith along to our kids, and that we have someone who has thought about that a lot, talked about it, written about it, and is a teacher in that area. Duffy Robbins is in studio today. He's been on the campus of the University of Northwestern. He's a professor of youth ministry at Eastern University in St. David's, Pennsylvania. Also author of a number of books, including Enjoy the Silence. We're hoping he won't actually expound on that one today.
Although our listeners might
enjoy it. Sure. That's right. We'll see later in the program. We might switch to talking about that one. We'll see how it goes. Speaking to Teenagers, Memory Makers, the Way to Youth Ministry. One of his more recent ones is called Building a Youth Ministry That Builds Disciples, a small book about a big idea. And anyway, Duffy, it's good to have you here.
Thanks, Neil. Pleasure to be here.
We were joking before the program because you're a youth minister. I guess we're making the assumption that you were that kid in the youth group that always acted up, and so now you're a youth minister. Is that how that happened?
Well, I was that kid, but I wasn't in the youth group.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I didn't actually become a Christian until I was in college, and probably because I was that kid. I mean, I do remember I went to Young Life when I was in, I went a little bit to Young Life. The way that happened was I wasn't attending Young Life on a regular basis, but I think most of your listeners are aware it's a ministry, it's an outreach ministry for high school kids, and I was definitely a part of their target audience, they had a weekend retreat for what they call campaigners, which is sort of their discipleship kids, you know, more serious kids. And anyway, this really great looking girl named Helen needed a ride. And I felt it was the least I could do for my fellow human being.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so, you're a magnanimous sort of guy. I mean, you were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I offered to take her. And that was my first, really, that was the first Christian retreat that I'd been on. And I didn't become a Christian that weekend, and nor did Helen really show any further interest. But it did sort of start a gestation process that culminated later in that year. I would say at that point born again, and that was my freshman year of college.
Is that experience? That as you say, you were the target. I mean, there's. That target has gotten a lot bigger, hasn't it, in recent years?
Refer to my weight.
Well, no, sorry. Neil. Okay. I guess I should have. I shouldn't have said you specifically.
Yeah. Right. It has gotten bigger. Let's just say it'll be easier to hit the target now than it was when I was in high school. But the target has gotten bigger. If you mean by that that there are fewer kids engaged in church, I mean, it is amazing actually how many kids in this country consider themselves religious or even self-identify as Christians. I think if the target audience itself demographically isn't bigger, the challenge certainly is.
The self-identify is always kind of one of those interesting things, isn't it? Where we say, well, I'm not really into I'm spiritual, right? But I'm not really into religion, organized Christianity.
Yeah, no, and that's why one has you say self-identify. I mean, you never know. And in a lot of studies that say, you know, religious kids do this and religious kids do that, that's so generic that it would be like. you know, saying bald people are all one way or the other, and so, you know, just you'd have to really break it down. So, but yeah, but the fact of the matter is, in some ways, I think, you know, Eugene Peterson said that actually a culture in which people are always talking about how spiritual they are, he said that's actually a bad sign. You know, that the people don't talk about their stomach unless it's hurting. And that people who are we were created in the image of God, that there should be sort of an inherent sense in which there is an inherent sense in which we're all spiritual. And so for people to go, yeah, I'm really spiritual, it almost points to a malady in the culture. But yeah, I think a lot of kids, a lot of kids say they do pray on a regular basis. And that they do believe in God. It's very ill-defined. I'm sure you're familiar with the work, maybe a lot of your listeners as well, the work of Christian Smith, a sociologist at Notre Dame, who did an enormous research project. I believe it was in 2004. It's called the National Study of Youth and Religion, NYSR. I'm sure one could find it online. But anyway, in that study, he talked about how typically, the faith of most young people today, he describes as MTD, which is kind of this very, very bland, you know, sort of therapeutic deism. It's you know, God. I kind of call it Oprah goes to the Holy Land. It's basically, you know, God's kind of this nice guy. It's sort of vague. His main goal is that at the end of the day, everybody seemed to have a swell time, and then he certainly, it's therapeutic in a sense. He would never do anything to impose his will on our self-actualization, so that's sort of the way he describes it. And I think that's pretty close.
Well, and I suppose some could say, well, maybe much of youth ministry, we're painting with a broad brush, but they're probably not countering that all the time, are they? We're just saying, hey, we, at the end of the day, we like everybody to have a good time, and we want to just sort of talk about felt needs and
be
good people.
You know? Yeah, but like the larger church in general, yeah. There's always a tension. And some yield to it more than others, but there's always a tension of, you know, our goal is to speak the truth in love. Sometimes we think it's unloving to speak the truth, and then we sort of just encourage people to feel good, to God doesn't want to, you know, to in any way bound your self-improvement and sense of self-fulfillment. Or the other people who are really good at speaking the truth, but they don't do it in love, and then kids just go, well, you're mean, and I don't like being around you. So it's just like in the wider church at large that in youth ministry you find people who go to both extremes, and I sort of liken it to where Paul says in Colossians that our speech is to be, that it's to be wise, and it's to be seasoned with salt. That you have some who are – there's so much salt that people just spit it out. And then there's some who have substituted sugar for what was supposed to be salt. And it's so sweet that it's losing all of the salt taste.
Duffy Robbins, my guest today. We're talking about
– cooking.
Cooking. And we're going to get into his career as an Olympic luge master. No, we're, none of that apparently is on the schedule. But because that would really be an interesting show. But in the meantime, Duffy's here and would be glad to take your call as we talk a little bit about not only youth ministry but more about how parents can maybe be better equipped to help our kids to have their faith deepened, and that we would be seasoned with salt as well in the way that we communicate, not only with maybe our youth pastors and those that volunteering in the church, but with our kids as well. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number, and we'd love to have you check in with us, 877-933-2484. Or you can always drop us a note. If you want to do that, you can go online at myfaithradio.com and then just click on the Connecting Faith show page. It's myfaithradio.com. We'll talk more with Duffy in a moment, professor of youth ministry at Eastern University in St. David's, Pennsylvania, noted youth ministry specialist and author of a number of books, like, what, 15 or so or more?
There really are. There. I mean, there's quite a few.
Quite a few, yeah.
I think two of them are still in print.
Okay, all right. So if you're going garage sailing this weekend,
you'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, go to your local Walmart, dollar table.
All right.
I own that place.
Okay. More with Duffy in a moment.
Here's what's coming up on the Next Faith Radio Mornings.
Thursday is the National Day of Prayer, and we'll be joined by Brian Fisher of Online for Life as we pray for the end of abortion. We'll also hear another update from pro-life advocate and Faith Radio host Kim Katola.
Also at 7:40, the mother-daughter-in-law relationship can be one of the most difficult tasks a young bride can face, but author Deb DeArmond says it can also be one of the most rewarding. She'll share how with her book, Related by Chance, Family by Choice.
Thursday's Faith Radio Morning starts at 6 a.m.
Hello, this is David Jeremiah with the Turning Point Program. When you support my friends at Faith Radio through your prayer and financial gifts, you make it possible for them to continue to help you grow in faith. Daily, they bring you programs like Turning Point with a strong biblical foundation. And they can't do it without you. And thank you for listening.
Join us with your support online at myfaithradio.com or on the phone at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484.
Talk about living out our faith, and particularly how we can help our kids adopt and live out a faith for the long haul. There's lots of emphasis, it seems like, on short term in the world in which we live, instant gratification and the like. Duffy Robbins is a professor of youth ministry at Eastern University in St. David's, PA. He's in studio today. He's on the campus of the University of Northwestern. In fact, for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, there's a youth night at Wooddale Church at 6:45 tonight, I think, is happening. So,
yeah, that'll be fun.
Be doing that if you're in the area. But talk a little bit about instant gratification, because I know one of the recent books you wrote about building discipleship that lasts a lifetime. Just maybe say a word about that. What does that look like?
I think one of the did you ever see the movie? Did you ever see the movie What About Bob?
We quote that movie a lot.
Okay,
here, so yes,
it's rated R.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think it was. But if you ever saw that movie, there was a scene in which Bill Murray, who plays the part of this guy, is agoraphobic. He's afraid to go out in public. He goes to see a therapist who's played by Richard Dreyfuss. And if you recall in the film, Richard Dreyfuss is sitting in his office. He's smug and sort of all knowing, but it's actually been a pretty good appointment. It's gone pretty well. Until the very end, when Richard Dreyfuss' character tells Bob that he's going to be going away by himself on with his family on vacation, and that Bob, it would be inappropriate for Bob to make contact, and that just sends Bob into a tailspin. You know, if you haven't seen the movie, you get a sense the panic. What am I going to do without my therapist? And that's the point at which Richard Dreyfuss, the therapist, goes over to the bookshelf and takes off of the shelf a book that he himself has written, and the name of the book is
Baby Steps.
That's right, Baby Steps. Yeah. Baby Steps. The thesis of that was basically you don't work your way to wholeness by taking giant steps. You work your way to wholeness by taking baby steps, and he sort of walks him a step at a time out of the office. I mention that, Neil, because I think that one of the problems in youth ministry, but in the church in general, is that we tend to think of faith as this big giant step deal, when in fact in Scripture it is more often played out in baby steps. I mean, you think about the people of Israel going into the land of Canaan. You know, they wanted God to kind of do it the way he did it with the Red Sea. You just kind of, you know, part it all and we just go through. God says, no, we're not going to do that here because Number one, if we do that, you're going to get cocky. And number two, there are a lot of wild animals that live out there in Canaan. And if these tribes, if we just annihilate them, and those tribes are not there to suppress the population of these animals, then when you arrive with your families, they will eat you. And so here's how we're going to do it. Every place the sole of your foot touches, that place I will give to you. So it's a step-by-step-by-step process. Same idea played out in the New Testament when Paul says in Colossians 2, 6, and 7, as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, so walk in him, rooted and built up. Rooted and built up are you have an agricultural metaphor and a construction metaphor, and both of them point to long-term processes. And so the idea is that real nurture does not happen overnight. It's a long-term thing. I think probably a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to experiences where they were sitting back in their teenage years around a campfire, the last night of summer camp, and the faces of their friends and peers are kind of, you know, orange and gold from the flames. These sparks are shooting up in this nighttime sky and pristine evening. And somebody, you know, a preacher, me, you know, somebody stands up and says, young people, you know, if you're serious about Jesus, I'm going to ask you to come up here and stand with me next to this campfire, you know. Or you know, young people, if you're really serious, come up here and throw a piece of wood into the fire, you know. Or if you're really, really serious, I'm just going to ask you to come up. This will not be easy, but come up and just stand in this campfire. And people do. And we go, that's great. You know, that's and I love those moments. Don't get me wrong. I love to see those moments when people take that first step of faith. But anybody who's been in youth ministry more than about 20 minutes can tell you that the test of those moments around the fire is what happens when the fire burns out. It's trying to sustain those steps long term. The book, one of the books that you mentioned, although you've certainly not mentioned it enough, but but one of the books that you mentioned is, it's not funny, Neil.
No,
is the book Building a Youth Ministry That Builds Disciples, and in that book, that's sort of the thesis of the book is that hey, we've got to build a faith that lasts. We want to build a faith that lasts, and Like for example, I have a real respect for. There's a youth rally. There are youth rallies done around the country called Acquire the Fire. Great. I mean, I've heard many kids who are impacted. But my experience in youth ministry has been, to some extent, it's not that hard to get kids to acquire the fire. What's hard is getting them to sustain the fire, to burn without burning out. If you go back in Exodus chapter 3, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, is that you know, what Moses wasn't stunned to see a bush burning. I mean, having been a shepherd, you know, living on the prairie, he'd seen prairie fires, brush fires. What if you read the text, what's remarkable to Moses about this bush is that burns but does not burn out. It's a flame that continues. And that's what we want to nurture in the lives of our students. That's what we want to build, and it's those baby steps of faith. Like I remember, I mean, being in this building, I can remember, you know, hearing about the Hour of Decision, and Billy Graham's you know, classic radio ministry for all those years, And it was powerful. I mean, I remember hearing, you know, Cliff Barrows and it's great. It points us to the Hour of Decision. But discipleship is about those daily decisions of ours, the baby steps that actually impact. Like you know, when we were off the air a few minutes ago, when most of the interesting conversation happens, we're talking about Tony Campola because Campola teaches at Eastern University where I teach, and he has emeritus status now. But Tony and I actually shared an office together for years, and we still wind up at a lot of the same events. And Tony is a guy who always calls us challenges the church to take giant steps of you know, big, huge, giant steps. And I love that. But I was telling some people the other day, it reminds me of this guy who was preaching at a youth event, and I was there also. And he was sort of Campolo-like in his delivery, yelling, you know, spitting, sweating profusely. And the kids were just responding and screaming back, and you know, just this call and response thing. And he got these kids pumped up, and it got to the point where, I mean, you could tell the speaker couldn't wait to see what he was going to say next. And he just yells out, "How many are willing to go to China?" You know, and 5,000 kids just, you know, stand up. And it was powerful. But when it was over, anyway, we went out to dinner because I was speaking in the morning and this guy was at night. And I said, "Man, that was amazing. You know, that was just awesome when you challenge the kids to go to China." But I said, "Here's the problem. They can't go to China. You know, they're going to have to go home tomorrow. They got to go to school. You know, their moms will be upset if they, you know, call from Shanghai. You know, hi, Mom, guess where I am, you know. Say hi, Ling." I said, you know, if you really want to call people to discipleship, don't call them to the giant step that they can take 20 years from now. Call them to the baby step they can take this afternoon. Tomorrow. It's not very dramatic, you know. I was actually talking to some students over the weekend about this, and I was speaking at a church in Tennessee, and I told them this exact story. You're not going to believe this, Neil, but some of the stories that speakers use, we repeat them from
really?
Time to time. Yeah.
Oh,
and so anyway, I know. in the course of this thing, I was saying that this guy, you know, is calling everybody to go to China. That's great. But that I said, really, if you want to be a disciple, maybe one of the most passionate moves you could make is just tonight go home and offer to wash the dishes. You know, it's not very dramatic. Don't go to China. Go home and wash it. But that is, I think, the mark of the kind of long-term faith that you're talking about. It's not unlike the long-term passion of a marriage where day in and day out, it's not just I do, it's I will continue to.
Duffy Robbins, my guest, he's written a number of books, and one that I want to mention. Make sure we
thank
mention
you.
That. Sure. Building a Youth Ministry That Builds Disciples, a small book about a big idea. It's a small book, but apparently it's really good. So, yeah.
And the sales have also been
equivalent to its size. Do we have time? Let's take David's call here. David's listening from Watertown and has a question or a comment about passing the faith along. David, go ahead. You're on with Duffy Robin.
Brothers, I wonder how much do we treasure our children, given as a gift from God to be with us in a unique setting, husband, wife, children. We better know that one day they're going to go, and we better love them, ask God to love them through us, so that they will want to be like us. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you said a mouthful, David. That's great. I mean, I think you're right. I would undeniably, and I think the research demonstrates this conclusively, one of the most profound predictors of a teenager's faith is the faith of their parents and the investment of their parents. The impact of family is immense. And as parents, that's a sobering but also exciting responsibility to recognize this. Even apart from research, though, this is precisely the mandate that we're given in Deuteronomy chapter 6 when Moses said to the people of Israel, you know, talk about these things when you're lying down and when you're walking, and this is it's a lifestyle deal. I think you didn't say this, but I think you're right. You sort of implied how easy it is for parents to want to farm out the spiritual development of our children to professionals, youth workers, pastors, Sunday school teachers, and hope they do that.
We'll pick up the conversation in a moment and invite you to stay tuned. You're welcome to join it as well. You have a question, comment, tell us a little bit about maybe your faith journey, passing the faith along with your kids. Love to hear it at 877-933-2484. Or if you've read one of Duffy's books, That would be
amazing.
That would be encouraging. So you could you could probably make his day just with one phone call. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a moment. Passing the faith along today with Duffy Robbins, who is about three decades worth of youth ministry, and we're not going to talk about it. I mean, was that, were you looking for a senior pastorate? And I mean, isn't that one of the questions that everybody asks?
Yeah,
well, you're just in youth ministry because you can't.
Right. When you've served your time.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, when I got into youth, I didn't even know I was getting into youth ministry. I was a youth. And I wanted to tell people about Jesus, and I didn't know there was such a thing as youth ministry at that time. And then I didn't – when I went to seminary, I didn't really think I was going to be a youth pastor. I just wanted to get in the game, really. Honestly, I didn't know if it was evangelism, discipleship, missions. I didn't think I was going to be a senior pastor, but I got my MDiv at Gordon-Conwell and was ordained in the United Methodist Church, but I didn't really think I was going to be a senior pastor. And I didn't actually when I graduated from seminary, I was in a music ministry. I was in this music ministry in North Carolina. We traveled a lot, but we had to stop doing that when my wife contracted pregnancy, and that's when we had to stop touring so much because the doctor said she's got to stop touring. And I didn't want to be a eunuch for the kingdom, so I said, "Okay, I'll stop." Also, so we localized in a church and found ourselves. I took a call to a church in Barrington, Rhode Island, Barrington Baptist Church, and to my absolute amazement, I loved it. I loved that church and the people and working with kids there. And during that time, I met some guys. There were only about seven of us, maybe. In all of New England at that point, this would have been 1978, who were doing full-time youth ministry. People just weren't doing it. But we met together, those seven guys, and we met once a month, all day, every month. And it was those guys that really galvanized in me a vision for long-term youth ministry. And I began to think about how strategic it was, what an important beachhead it was for the church. This is – high school is the last bottleneck that every kid goes through before they're sort of dispersed into so many different walks of life that it becomes hard to reach the cross section with the cross. And so, of course, statistically we know that young people are more open and they're more willing and ready to make decisions than people – that they get older, it diminishes the chance. And so anyway, that's really when I – decided as long as the Lord would give me effectiveness with teenagers, well, that made all the sense in the world. That's where I was going to plug in. And so that's why I'm still doing it. And I'm having a great time, man.
You want to talk about, the kids, you talk about sort of being open to hearing the message of the cross. Of course, we know all the statistics about once they get out on their own, that there's this walk away percentage, whatever it is, and that they're not coming back like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Kara Powell and others talked about sticky faith. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do we make it stick?
Well, it's an important question. I think part of it is thinking about the way that we actually do our youth ministry and do our nurture in the church. There's no question, but a big part of it goes back to family. I mean, popular and easy to sort of leave the responsibility at the feet of youth workers and go, well, they're just doing fun and games. But that's really a disservice. There are a lot of youth workers who are there's nothing wrong with fun or games, but they are doing serious, thoughtful work. To be sure, there are a lot of youth workers that aren't doing that as well. And some responsibility does need to be laid at the feet of those of us in youth ministry. But it starts It starts, and the most profound impact comes from the family, no question about it. But within the realm of youth workers, I think in one of the books that you frankly haven't again mentioned very very much, but anyway, it's the book Ministry of Nurture, and in that book, it's not written for parents, it's written for youth workers. But in that book, I talk about the traits of a real life teenage disciple. Some people say there is no such thing, you know, as a teenage disciple. It's an oxymoron, sort of like, you know, the comedian that does the whole comedy routine. I can't remember. I think it's Stephen Wright, but he talks about, you know, jumbo shrimp and sure, military yeah, intelligence yeah. and Microsoft Works, and, country music, yeah. and United Methodist, and that that some people sort of put youth ministry and teenage discipleship in that same category. I think part of that is because we've got to go back and say, well, what's the end product here? What are we trying to actually nurture? And that's a big part of Kara's emphasis is Kara Powell's emphasis is you know, we're not the finish line is not when they graduate from high school. The finish line is not when they graduate from college. Reggie Joyner is another who's, you know, we moved back the finish line. And again, it's sort of the question is not in that book. Building youth ministry builds disciples. That's kind of the point that I'm trying to make is that it's not really where they are now. It's where they're going to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And so in Ministry of Nurture, I define five different marks of a real-life teenage disciple and say that as youth workers and as parents, these are the sort of traits we want to cultivate.
Without, I guess, you know, you won't sell a book, I suppose, but could you kind of summarize some of the traits?
No.
Okay. All right. So, just give us the page. Just give us the page numbers and we'll look it up on our own.
Well,
so,
I'll try to give you a quick, you say you want to like a quick sketch of each of those. Okay. Well, stop me if it gets boring, but no, don't do that. let me at least get to the first one.
Okay.
But the first mark that I define the book is what I kind of describe as a firsthand faith. You know, when I was a little boy, we would take a lot of trips as a family, and Mom would come in and pack our bags for us, you know, because she knew we would leave out important items. And I didn't mind that. I thought that was okay, except that Mom packed a lot of stuff for me that I knew I was never, ever going to wear in public.
Yeah.
You know, like me and my brother, she bought for me and my brother a lot of matching stuff. And it's not funny, Neil.
No,
I'm sharing some kind of painful.
Yeah,
but I don't know where she read that. The one thing guys really dig is dressing identical. But anyway, so, you know, there was a lot of that. And then my mom was a kindergarten teacher, and so she had to do everything creatively.
Sure.
And, you know, she couldn't just, like, fix – like, I had a pair of shorts. One of my favorite pairs of shorts got a rip in the thigh. I guess just the muscle. Anyway, she sewed it up. But when she sewed it up, what she did when she mended it, she embroidered on my left thigh in kind of a crescent the word howdy, big red block letter, howdy.
Nice.
Like that's going to help me make friends, you know. Hey, guys, check out the thigh. And so I knew I wasn't ever going to wear that stuff. But I never complained about it because when we went on a trip, I never had to carry the bag. You know, my mom had to carry her bag. My dad carried his bag. My big brother carried his. I carried my coloring book, you know, to this day when I travel. I never had to. But something changed one day. I was in about my 10th year of life, and I was going to go away by myself to camp. And so I began to say no. You know, she blew into the bedroom that morning, items of apparel flying through the air. And I sort of stunned everybody. I said, no, Mom, I'm not going to take this. I'm not going to take that. I'm not going to. And she looked at me for a long time, and I'll never forget, she said, okay, all right. But, you know, if you don't have everything you need, it'll be your responsibility. And I'm going, holy cow, you know, I won't have the howdy shorts. But in a sense, I think that's what happens with a lot of teenagers, is that especially kids who grow up in a youth group, or even more so if they grow up in church and in a Christian school, is that basically there's somebody around to pack their faith bags for them. you know, you need this doctrine. Don't forget this Bible verse. Stuff this in there. Oh, what's it? Doesn't matter. Just pick it. Just keep it and go with it. And it's fine until you get to be maybe 14, 15 years old. Then you're walking down the hallway, your middle school, your high school, and you're going, man, this bag's getting kind of heavy. And if I really take all these things seriously, this bag could come between me and my girlfriend when we're out, you know, Saturday night. Or this bag would take up a lot of space here in the car when I'm out with my buddies on Friday night. And so what happens is kids begin taking stuff out of the bag. Again, I'm a Christian, but I just don't think you have to have this. And I love God. Like, I just don't think you need it. And they start lightening the load little by little until by the time they kind of graduate from high school, they sort of graduate from youth group. And for all practical purposes, they've kind of graduated from God. And it's not that they don't – they still have the bag. Mark, Christianity, there's only one problem, and that it's now empty. Sort of, you know, it has the form of religion, but it lacks the power. That, I think, is where we in the church and as parents need to be more proactive in helping kids own the faith for themselves. I don't mean own their own little tailor-made faith. I mean own the faith, capital T-H, you know, E, capital F, the faith for themselves, that they need to embrace it. You know, when Jesus said, you know, take up your cross, follow me. There are a lot of kids, for example, who, well, my parents follow the Lord, I follow my parents. My youth group, the more dynamic your youth group, the greater is the risk, I think, of building what I call sort of secondhand fellowship, because it's so fun and it's so dynamic and my youth worker is so awesome. My youth worker follows the Lord, I follow my youth worker. But ultimately, and this is, you know, what this is Christian Smith's research, you know, demonstrates so convincingly, is that secondhand fellowship is a lousy substitute for firsthand fellowship. And they're not going to sustain the faith if we haven't helped them to own their own faith. So those are one trait, but those are the kind of traits that I'm talking about in ministry of nurture.
And I assume that we, our tendency maybe as parents, even as, you know, youth ministers, is, well, we'll add sort of another book or another truth, right? That it's, well,
yeah,
it's just propositional truth. We just need to pile on more truth because that, you know,
right.
And that may not be the real need, right?
That's right. That's right. In fact, another of those marks, although after having heard how long it took me to explain the first one, you may not really want to hear a second one, but I'll just mention another one briefly since your producer is holding up signs
sure.
and now
yeah.
sweating blood. But
yeah.
but basically the idea of that it needs to be fleshed out faith. And what I mean by that is that you're right, that it's good. I believe that we need to do a better job of teaching doctrine and propositional truth. I think that's been a fault, actually, certainly of parenting. We don't really catechize our kids, and in youth group we've sort of moved away from that because it's not as you know, I mean, you hear people, youth workers say, well, I'd rather my kids know God than know about God. And I'm going, well, if you don't know something about the God you know, you don't really know much, you know. But so I'm all for the truth. But ultimately, at the end of the day, there also has to be a sense in which it's a faith that is flesh. I mean, we worship a God who was incarnate, enfleshed. And that means usually putting us in places of risk. And therein lies the problem, is that no parent wants to see their kid in a place of risk. We don't really want our kids to be given the chance to make bad decisions. But what we forget is that's how most of us learn to make good decisions. As youth workers, that's kind of one of the mantras of youth ministry. I want to make my group a safe place for kids. I get that. But remember what Mr. and Mrs. Beaver, you know, told the kids when they walked into Aslan and when they walked into Narnia, that Aslan's not safe. He's good, but he's not safe. And I think in our effort to make youth group a safe place, we forget that most people don't discover God when they feel safe. They discover God when they feel unsafe. And that's the hard part about it. We love them. We want to keep them safe. But real life discipleship is not just a firsthand faith. It's a fleshed out faith.
We're hoping in the final segment that we'll get a movie clip. We've talked about Narnia, and what about Bob? Maybe we'll get Princess Bride. We'll get the trifecta here. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So hang on for that, because it may surprise you. Duffy Robbins, my guest, is professor of youth ministry at Eastern University in St. David's, PA. He's written a number of books, and several that we might even mention. Building a Youth Ministry that Builds Disciples, a small book about a big idea. One of them, Duffy's in studio today. We've got time for a couple more thoughts or questions. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number.
There's no shortage of messages in your life. Phone calls, text messages, face-to-face requests.
Mom.
But in the midst of your daily communication overload, find messages that build your faith and encourage your walk with God. Compelling stories, insightful podcasts, and ways to get involved. Get the latest from Faith Radio in your Facebook newsfeed when you join us on our Facebook page. Just search My Faith Radio on Facebook.com to join us today.
I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Are you new to the station? Well, welcome. It's great to have you tuning in. We have a new listener packet that's designed for friends just like you. It tells you a little bit about the station, who we are, why we exist, and what we're hoping to accomplish in the Upper Midwest. It's yours free for the asking at myfaithradio.com. Check it out. It's myfaithradio.com. It's the new listener packet. Request yours today.
Talking today a little bit about some of the traits, some of the marks of a discipled teen with Duffy Robbins. I mentioned a couple of things about needing a first-hand faith and a fleshed-out faith. And Duffy serves as a professor of youth ministry at Eastern University in St. David's, PA, travels a great deal. He's written dozens of books, Building Youth Ministry That Builds Disciples, one of his more recent ones. He's also written Speaking to Teenagers, Memory Makers, The Way to Youth Ministry. We're talking today. By the way, there's an event going on, a youth night, coming up tonight for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area at Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie. And you can check that out on their website. 6:45, it happens tonight. So, Duffy, one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about, there's lots of discussion about, you know, how sort of churches as they grow, do we separate out? Is it all about generations? So, well, we got the kids doing their thing over here. We got everybody else over here. But what's your thought on? I mean, obviously, there needs to be some time of sort of personal attention. But is that a good thing? Have we kind of gone overboard on that?
There's a guy named Stuart Cummings Bond who back in the 80s actually coined a phrase to describe what happens in the church. When a church, what happened in the church, you know, in the between the 50s and the 80s, when all these baby boomers became adolescents, and everybody, not just the church, but Madison Avenue, you know, Hollywood, everybody began to awaken to this demographic that was emerging, that was massive, of all these young people, and over time, as the church began to address the unique needs of young people, and I think everybody agrees that there are some unique needs. And unique, desires and likes and preferences. I mean, when you get your license, I mean, your life changes in dramatic ways. So right around 16, I mean, it makes a big difference how you make your choices about time. And what happened was he said, well, let's make something special for these guys. And so, yeah, we'll have a youth pastor, and they can sort of have their own pastor. And then we'll have a youth group, and they can kind of have their own time. And we'll maybe have a youth room. And so instead of going to the Sunday school, everybody will go. And what if they had a youth house, like that old shack out back? We can get some old sofas, and they can just go there. And what if they had their own service, because they don't like the music, and we want them to like the music, and we don't like their music. And, you know, so we certainly don't want to change. So let's have them do their own. And so basically what happened was, over time, probably for many good reasons, or I should say well-intentioned reasons, the youth ministry became this distinct group. it was like the church is one circle, and then there was this other little circle up. If you think of the face of a clock, there was this other circle completely detached up at about where the 10 is on the clock. Stuart Cummings Bond described this as a one-eared Mickey Mouse, that the youth group actually by default became this detached group of people. The flaw in this approach, although much of it is well-intentioned, is that kids tend to graduate out of that 1 year. They are no longer – they're not in high school forever, and they're not in college forever. And so we've actually weaned them from one of the main resources that they're going to need to sustain long-term growth. We know from research that one of the greatest predictors of long-term faithfulness to Christ is membership and involvement in a local church, being active in a local church. So unwittingly, we actually weaned kids from one of the main lifelines that they would need as adults. And so that's a mistake that was made. Now, there are some who say, let's correct that by doing away with youth ministry, burn down the youth house, fire the youth pastor, youth ministry is unbiblical, let's just put them back in the big circle again. Whenever I hear someone say youth ministry is unbiblical, I go, yes, and so is air conditioning, and so are organs. It would be much more accurate to say, does youth ministry help us reach biblical goals, goals that are defined in Scripture? And the truth of the matter is some youth ministry does not, and some youth ministry does. And the youth ministry that does should not be snuffed or diminished. It should be encouraged. And so I would say that a more accurate picture of the church would be sort of an ear of the mouse that overlaps, that there's part of it, a big part of it, that overlaps the church. There's a part of it that recognizes that there are some kids who don't know Jesus, who don't think they want to know Jesus, don't know God, don't want to come to church, or maybe kids whose parents don't ever come to church. When there has to be enough outside of that circle to bring those kids into the circle. But the momentum is always let's move them towards the church. Let's move them towards the church. And to whatever extent the outside of that ear is poached, is poking outside, to whatever extent it's moving kids away from and not towards the church, then that, I think, is moving them away from a biblical goal. But I think it is a biblical goal to see, let's get those kids who are outside the church, let's move them in, let's move them toward it.
Yeah, which is where you were, right?
Early That's on. Right. That's right. So, yeah. I was one of those kids. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So speaking of kids, if your kids were helping you write a book, would they say, here's what Duffy should have written in his theories and practices?
Well, first of all, I was just talking the other day to their probation officer.
Yeah, sure.
No, they're well aware of, of a lot of mistakes that I did. I mean, I thought being a youth pastor would kind of give me a leg up. And I suppose some ways it did, but I don't care. I don't care how much you know about teenagers. When the all-nighter is in your house because they're your kids, it's a different ballgame. I mean, I can still remember agonizing nights, when you're laying there. Every parent of a teenager knows about conversations where you're going, your child has said, can I have permission to do this? And you're going, oh, wow, what should we tell him? Should we say yes? Should we say no? Should we say maybe? Should we say, honey, I think that's a felony? I mean, you struggle with that, and we struggle with that. But I love who my girls are. They love Jesus, and they love me and my wife really well. And so I don't attribute that to great parenting. I attribute it to intentional parenting and a great God and great kids.
And I know, you guys like Reggie Joyner talked a lot about, hey, how parents and youth ministries working together, getting on the same page. What would you, maybe just an encouragement for parents today, to how could they maybe take the first step in getting on the same page with their youth ministries in their churches, or what encouragement they could give to them?
I would say that, that youth minister can be a great asset to you, but they are not the person responsible for the discipling of your teenager. But they can be a tremendous help. And even if you are doing what you think is a good job without them, then you still want to integrate them in the life of the church. And to that extent, I think this is a team effort. It's the youth worker working together with parents. It's all of us trying to – because the fact of the matter is the family is not just the people that have your last name. The family in the kingdom of God extends to all of us. And so when people say, you know, I just believe in family-based ministry, well, biblically, Jesus said, who's my father? Who's my mother? You know, he clearly intended us to talk about family as a larger picture. That doesn't mean the small needs to be neglected. It can't be. But it's bigger than just my mom and my dad. We want to help our kids integrate both of those families.
If your kids don't want to go to youth group, you have a pat answer?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Say, if you go, I'll buy you a car.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
we got a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay, good. I was going to say there are many, many questions about parenting that that whenever I speak, I do a lot of parent seminars. And a book that I want to recommend about this is a book, I'll be honest, I contributed to it, but I didn't edit it. It's written by a guy named Wayne Rice. Wayne Rice. Wayne's the guy Uncle Ben converted.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Wayne Rice, it's published by InterVarsity Press. It's called There's a Teenager in My House. And I'm mentioning that, Neil, because the question you just asked, as well as others like it, really hard nitty-gritty questions are addressed there. And they're given there the more time than we have here.
Good. You want to give a website out?
I don't have one.
Okay.
But
right,
I have
well,
a
okay.
That
well,
I
just
like.
Yeah, if you want to give out, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, Duffy
Fandango.
Robbins. Sure. Duffy Robbins teaches professor of youth ministry at Eastern University in St. David's, Pennsylvania, and he's written a number of books. And we mentioned just the one there that he helped with Wayne Rice. There's a Teenager in My House from InterVarsity, but he's got 15 or 20 or so, and kind enough to join us in studio today. He's actually doing an event at the Wooddale Church for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area tonight. And Duffy, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for letting me be here. Thank you, Ryan, for your work at the board.
All right. We'll do this again sometime when we've
got
more to say.
What are you guys doing tomorrow?
We don't know. It's just every day it's a surprise,
okay.
So which is why you'll want to check out the podcast, maybe to listen afterwards, see how we decided what we're doing tomorrow. MyFaithRadio.com is the website. It's MyFaithRadio.com. Click on Connecting Faith.